ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there. My name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the Country Hour. I trust you all had a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. It was a wet Christmas for a lot of top-end cattle stations. The first monsoonal burst of the season delivered some fantastic rain. And as we go to air this afternoon, there's still a flood watch in place for parts of the Barkly and Carpentaria catchments. And there is a minor flood warning in place for the MacArthur River. Across the border into outback Queensland, the story is not so good. Conditions over there are worsening and cattle producers are concerned for their livestock.
Yeah, we need a little bit of a break in the weather to get some helicopters up here and shift some cattle. Yeah, I mean, there will be losses because of the cold. There'll be calves and things like that that can't survive this constant rain and cold.
Yeah, so that's Ashley Gallagher from Sawtell Creek Station near Normanton in the Gulf Country. You'll hear more from him in just a moment. We start today's Country Hour by heading to the Mataranka region. Rowan Sullivan is at Cave Creek Station. Rowan, tell us about the Christmas period at your place in terms of rainfall. What was it like?
Oh, well, pretty good, actually. We had a nice couple of rain. It's Christmas Day and Boxing Day, actually, both really cool, wet sort of days. Temperature under 30 degrees. So any day under 30 degrees is a nice day around here. So, yeah, we've done pretty well, actually. I think our biggest fall was 60-odd for that period.
And according to the Bureau, you've had around 150 millimetres over 7 days. That sound about right?
Yeah, that'll be about right. And I think probably a bit more down at our other block at Lara, at Burdham Creek. So, we've done pretty well, actually. It hasn't gone too mad, which is always a bit of a risk when monsoons, lows hanging around and that sort of thing.
Mm. The Burdham Creek itself, what's the latest on it?
Well, this morning it's 1.1 over the road at just out from Larimar. I was down there yesterday and it was 1.2, so it is dropping slowly, but I don't expect it'll drop very, very fast because there's got to be a lot of water coming down from further upstream, like at Hidden Valley, because a lot of that water comes through down the Sunday Creek and down the Burdham, and then water around from round waters and back as far as nearly as Dunmara. Actually, that water will come through some of it down the Burdham.
So there's a lot of water moving through the landscape at the moment, and a bunch of stations in your region that have got, 100, 200 millimetres plus. What sort of Christmas present is that for the region?
Oh, no. Like, I don't think I've heard of anyone who's not been happy with the rain. It's, really good. And, surprisingly, we'd only had about, we had 2 inches for October and 2 inches for November. So we were certainly looking for a bit of rain. And, sort of around Christmas, New Year, that's always to get a bit of a monsoon burst and going.
We're about to hear from some stations over in the Gulf Country of Queensland who it seems like maybe they've had a bit too much rain and the wind chill's getting up. Have you heard of any similar stories in the Northern Territory at all?
No, I can't say I have, Matt. I don't think I haven't heard anything like that because I think that the low actually intensified as it moved when I sort of down the Gulf or went over onto the coast and down the Gulf, and I think it actually intensified a bit. So that's probably part of the reason behind those that wind chill and the heavier rain.
So what's to be done at Cave Creek today then?
Well, I'm just doing a few odd jobs really. I'm sort of caretaking here at the moment and fixing tyres and doing a bit of weed spraying and weed pulling and keeping the potties and the chooks and dog bed, so it's pretty quiet really.
And there's no cricket to listen to?
Well, no.
God.
No. Yeah. No, that was a bit of a I sat down and watched that on Friday. after Saturday. Yeah. And she was all over Red Rover. So.
A full hour of Country Hour instead. So I don't know whether to say you're welcome or apologies. But
as I say, it's an ill wind that blows no good, Matt.
Well, thank you so much for your time for our show today, Rowan, and I hope 2026 treats you all really kindly.
Yeah, thanks, mate, Matt, and we'll catch you later.
Yeah, that's Rowan Sullivan at Cave Creek Station near Mataranka, about 150 millimetres in the gauge over the last sort of 7 days, the Christmas period. But there's been some larger falls. I'm just looking at the seven-day rainfall totals for the Northern Territory. Gilnockie stations received 260 millimetres. Delamere Range, 286. Victoria River Downs cattle station, 159. Channel Points had 215. Dry River cattle station, 220 millimetres. And Merganella Airstrip, 263. They're seven-day rainfall totals. And they're pretty decent. So, in general, the Territory and the cattle country has done well over the Christmas period. Some really nice rain. As mentioned, though, the story not so great across the border into outback Queensland. There's been big rain over there, and the forecast is for more rain and cool winds. And that's got livestock producers concerned. Ashley Gallagher, he's from Sawtell Creek Station near Normanton. So at his place, they've had 450 millimetres since Christmas Eve. He says rivers are up, roads are cut, and he knows that he needs to move cattle quickly.
All the rivers are flooded now, you know, like the rivers are over bridges and stuff like that. So places are isolated. We've got, we need to, if it comes any, well, we'll come higher because it's now starting to rain up in the catchment. So, we need a little bit of a break in the weather to get some helicopters up here and shift some cattle.
That's sort of the big concern as well, because when we were speaking yesterday, you said it's quite cool as well, and you know, you don't want to say it, but somewhat reminiscent of 2019. Is there a lot of concern that that's where this is heading?
I think there's it's pretty fresh in everybody's mind, and there's a real concern. This amount of rain, very, very similar conditions. So, everybody's pretty worried about that. You're getting a bit anxious to try and get stuff done, and it's the weather's not actually allowing us to get it done at the minute. So,
how are you going out your way? You know, are you prepared for this kind of flooding? Have you got supplies? How are you all going?
Most places would have supplies, and I guess the good thing is, like, councils up here, they're used to it. They're pretty supportive. They once people get cut off and that, they start doing a bit of a ring around, and like I said, once the helicopters can fly, a lot of people fly supplies in like that. The town itself, normally we can get trucks up to the other side of the river and boat stuff in, but I guess it's a part of every wet season, really. But it's never good. It's not an easy task to do or anything like that. Everyone, if we don't have to do it, it's good. But we just got to get on with it and do it.
Mm. And you said as well that you'd had some earlier rain at the start of December, which helped the cattle to build up a bit of condition and strength. So I guess how much do you think that will help in a situation like this where you've got the nonstop rain, you've got the wind chill, conditions aren't, great for livestock up in the northwest right now, but how much will that rain have helped, do you think?
It will have helped a bit. Obviously, there's a lot of places here that had fires from, so the rain was good in early December to put a bit of green grass back where the fires were. So, the cattle were fairly strong, so hopefully, there will be losses because of the cold. There'll be calves and things like that that can't survive this constant rain and cold, but it could be a lot worse. It could have been way worse if we didn't get that early rain.
Yeah. Anything else, Ashley, that you want to add in there before I let you go?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Yeah?
I want to add in that I'm pretty disappointed in the bomb website. Not so much their radars or anything like that. That's, we can all look at the old one. But we've got all these automatic readers on the rivers to tell us what's coming. And on the Norman River, there's like four or five of them that aren't working or not reading. On the Flinders River, there's like seven of them that aren't working. Like it's kind of hard to, we all know it's going to come, but yeah, it's a little bit harder to prepare if you don't know if they've already got rain or not up there. Yeah, so I don't know how they make it work, but a lot of these readers weren't working last wet season either, so it looks like nobody's done anything in the dry time.
That's Ashley Gallagher from Sawtell Creek Station near Normanton speaking to Maddie McCosker. Floraville Station in the Gulf Country, it lost a lot of cattle to floods just a few years ago, and the manager there, Ernie Camp, is worried about history repeating itself as the rain just keeps on coming down. He's had 225 millimetres since Christmas, but says there's been a lot more than that in the Leichhardt River catchment.
They've all had a reasonable flow to moderate flooding. So it only takes one night of heavy rainfall, especially in the upper catchments in the area around Mount Isa, where the disaster began in 2023, because rainfall in that area is on high ridges, and most of that runs off and comes to the north. If it moves a little bit further south, well, the possible disaster is heading the other direction. At the moment, it's sort of stalled around the Mount Isa area, and there has been heavier falls around there, and seems to be moving a little bit east as well. So it just takes a night of heavy falls, as we learned out in 2023, to turn what from a minor flooding event to an extraordinary flooding event.
Yeah. Speaking to people, a lot of the maybe uncertainty at the minute is about where this, well, how this will develop, because, you know, this non-stop kind of monsoonal rain, the cooler temperatures, the wind chill, that's the concern for a lot of people right now. And whether, as it is, you know, people aren't able to get into helicopters and move livestock. So how do you think people are feeling in that space about being able to get out and move their stock when they need to, you know, and the fact that they can't necessarily do that right now?
I think most of people are concerned of these things, but there are certain things outside your control, and the best thing that they can do is look after themselves, look after their families and their loved ones, and take small steps to secure your assets, whatever it is around your homestead and stuff like that. But certainly don't take risks. We have enough at risk now without risking lives. So I suppose the best thing you can do, and it's hard to do at the time, is focus on the positive. You know, the rain will stop, the grass will grow, and the cattle will become fat. The nature will come back alive again, which it does so many times, but sometimes there has been a big cost to pay, both personally with livestock and even the wonderful Australian natures around us.
That's Ernie Camp, who's a cattle producer, and he's the mayor of the Berkshire Council, speaking there to Maddie McCosker. So he's at Floraville Station in the Gulf Country. And he mentioned how the weather seems to have parked itself up at Mount Isa. And yes, I'm just looking at the Mount Isa radar right now. And while Mount Isa itself might be enjoying a little bit of clear sky this afternoon, to the east and southeast of Mount Isa, wow, it's just so much moisture there. And I see over in Queensland, there's a severe weather warning now in place for heavy, locally intense rainfall and damaging winds for the northwest, for the Gulf Country, for the upper Flinders. Really severe weather there. And as you're hearing there from both Ashley and Ernie, there's an expectation that there's going to be stock losses. And hopefully the weather can move on and they can get some blue skies, but the forecast is not looking that great. Meanwhile, here in the Northern Territory, looking at, well, the Katherine radar and the Darwin radar and the Nhulunbuy radar, oh, not much to see at all. Not much to see. All of the weather has moved into Queensland. And then, of course, over in the west, you've now got Cyclone Hayley sort of heading towards Broome. So you've got two big weather systems that have just drawn the moisture away from the NT. We're stuck in the middle and things are warming up. I'll be speaking to the Weather Bureau at 1:05. If you've got a question for the Bureau, send it through on the text line, which is 0487 0499 1057. If you've got a question to the Bureau about the week ahead, someone's here is reporting 0.3 at Donkey Flat, and there's rumours of fish being caught in the Little Roper. So someone here on 0487 99 1057.
Matches total, cattle class, tow drive for Sherbert Livestock. We're all flat out. Give us plenty of room on the road, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
And speaking of roads, with all of this rain over the Christmas period, there's a few road closures out there this afternoon. So according to the Road Report NT website, the Plenty Highway is deemed impassable between Jervois Station and the Queensland border. The Sandover Highway is closed between Emeru Elkedra boundary through to the Queensland border. The Carpentaria Highway is closed between Cape Crawford and the MacArthur River Mine. The Buntine Highway is closed at Armstrong River. The Buchanan's closed at Dashwood Crossing. And the Barclay Stock Route closed between Stuart Highway intersection and the Tablelands Highway intersection. That's just some of the road closures, some of the major ones. Stay up to date via Road Report NT. For years and years and years on the Country Hour, you've been hearing stories about the potential for virtual fencing and what a game changer it could be. I think a lot of people have grown to be sceptical about this idea of virtual fencing. But up next, a story out of New South Wales. You'll hear from a property, one of the first in New South Wales to put virtual fencing collars onto their cattle. This technology was only legalised in New South Wales this month, right? Which I didn't know about, but it's only been made lawful. And you'll hear from one property that's got straight onto it. So what are the benefits? You'll hear from them next after a bit of Johnny Cash. The man in black, Johnny Cash, right across the territory on the ABC. You are tuned into the Country Hour. Matt Brown with you this afternoon. An organic beef property in the Hunter Valley region of New South Wales is one of the first farms in that state to put virtual fencing collars onto their cattle. This technology was only legalised in New South Wales this month, and Adam Turner was straight away keen to get involved. He told Amelia Bernasconi about the process of collaring up the herd.
It was actually a hell of a lot smoother than what I thought. Like, I had to duck out in the morning, so I missed out on the first sort of bit, probably half the herd nearly, when they were collaring them. So the guys from Holter come out and gave us a hand to collar up the first lot. So yeah, when I got back, they were in a pretty good swing and got them all on pretty smoothly. And then yeah, we walked them across the paddock, set up like a training paddock. So we just had in a smaller paddock, a temporary electric fence set up outside of their virtual fence. And then yeah, we've just been doing that every day for sort of a week, I suppose, 5-6 days. And not last night, the night before, we took that temporary fence down and had them on fully virtual fence. So, yeah, wow. Going pretty good.
How big is the mob? What sort of, like, what types of cattle are we talking here? Did they push the boundaries at all?
There's 70 cows and calves in this mob. And, yeah, there's one in there that she seems to just want to do what she wants to do. we keep seeing one number that's outside the fence. She stays close, but she's going out picking that better feed outside the fence. And what happens there is, like, it'll give her a couple of electric pulses to say, come back to the fence. And if she ignores them, then it pauses the collar. And then we can just see if there's one that's consistently causing a problem, like she is. We can just pause her collar, and she's actually a cull heifer. Mm-hmm. So we'll sell her in the new year and get rid of her. But the rest of them have all been playing the game really well.
Because a big part of this is the welfare, obviously. You mentioned the cows and calves, and the calves sort of get a bit of free rein. It's just the mums with the collars?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so the calves can slip through in front of the cows or behind the cows. We find that they'll go out in front, pick that nicer feed before the cows get a go at it. So I'm thinking, and from people that I've spoken to over in New Zealand, they've seen higher weaning rates because then calves have been able to sneak ahead and get that better feed.
Yeah, right. And you mentioned there that one little problem heifer, you know, she they get an audio signal, then they get the pulse. Yeah, tell us about what you saw in terms of the intelligence of your cattle as they learnt these different prompts.
oh, within, this is probably what really blew me away, was how quick it happened. So like I said, we're setting up a temporary fence just outside their virtual fence, just so they had a visual as well. And I think the first or second day, I let them into a paddock, like into their next paddock. We had a virtual fence set up and I let them in and then went up and set up the temporary fence while they were grazing. So as they were grazing up the paddock, obviously they were hitting the virtual fence before they were getting to me. And I could hear them. I could hear the collars starting to beep as they're getting close, and they were reacting to that beep straight away, turning away, coming back down the paddock, or one of them was walking along it and she'd sort of sway her neck one, so I'd hear the beeps and then sway her neck the other way. She knew exactly what was going on. She was playing with it, trying to get as much of the better feed as she could. Yeah, so it was really interesting how quick they'd obviously learnt them sound cues.
Yeah, because I've heard a bit through this conversation that dairy cattle will probably take it up better, but it sounds like, yeah, your beef cattle are just as clever.
Yeah, I think so. And our cows, like, to be fair, that mob there, and that's why we started with them, so it was an easier learning curve, they are moved every day behind electric fence, so they're very much grazed like dairy cattle. So they're used to people going out there, moving them around, having strips of feed rather than whole paddocks. So I think it was probably an easier learning curve for them. But, yeah, I think all the cattle are pretty smart, so I don't think it'll take them long to cotton on to what's going on.
Yeah. So how many more collars have you got on the way? Are you going to do this right across the farm?
Yeah, so we've got another farm that we're rolling it out on in the new year. Mid-January, we'll do another 130 up there.
So it all seems to be going well. Just remind us, Adam, why you've been, you know, so much at the forefront of the virtual fencing movement in New South Wales. What gains do you see it coming back to your property?
I see, in general, more usability of grazing country, like especially on coastal country where you've got a lot of hills and stuff. You can't intensively manage cattle on them hills real easily or at all. So I think it opens up them opportunities where you can start pushing cattle to eat up further into the hills or utilise more of the pasture. So I think that will be a hell of a lot better. And then providing more rest, like I said, we do move our cattle daily. So for us, that's normal. But for a lot of people, they don't, because they just don't have the labour to be able to do that. And by doing that, you know, like a lot of people can double or triple their carrying capacity because they can utilise more pasture, they can provide rest and then get more resilience in their farming operation. So I think there's a whole lot of benefits there. And then I think there's also a lot of land that is underutilized or not utilized at all because it doesn't have good enough infrastructure, where this will open the gates to be able to, you know, not only graze them areas, but graze them very well.
And what peace of mind does it give you that you can sort of track your cattle much easier? I hope you're getting a bit of time off the farm to put your feet up over the Christmas New Year break. Just having that extra intel in your pocket, what does it do for, I guess, your headspace?
Oh, it's great. Like, we're in the butcher shop, you know, leading up to Christmas. So last night was quite a late night, but I could get on the app before I left. I shifted the cattle's virtual fence. Then by the time I got home, I could check the app, see that they'd all moved through, and then my son could check them this morning. So, you know, previous to that, I would have had to get home that night, grab a torch, go out, move the fence, move the cattle, come back up. Like, it just takes that extra labour out and gives you that bit more flexibility. Like, obviously, we're still always with the cattle, but you don't have to be there at certain times. You can manage them remotely and then, you know, obviously just monitor them as you're operating.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a big one. And to be able to check the cattle is another thing. Like, I looked there before on the app and I could see that they were all around the water trough. So I messaged my son and said, can you just make sure they haven't switched that trough off, because they're all rushing that trough. So, I think from a livestock health sort of point of view, I think there's big gains to have there as well. Peace of mind, I suppose.
That's Adam Turner, who runs cattle in the Hunter Valley region of New South Wales, and he's put virtual fencing collars onto them. Now, on tomorrow's Country Hour, you'll hear about the research being done here in the Northern Territory to find out whether virtual fencing can work and be viable in northern beef systems. That's on tomorrow's program.
G'day, I'm Brad Inglis from Sturt Plain Station, south of Dunmara on the Stuart Highway, and you're listening to the NT Country Hour.
Remember when Tropical Cyclone Fina blew through the Northern Territory in November? That was a crazy time. A cyclone in November, and a lot of trees went down, and you might remember the government opened up a special green waste site out at Hidden Valley. Well, that site is going to be open to the public again next month but for a very different reason. I'm joined in the studio by Fiona Broom. We get something for free.
We do, Matt. Not often we get something for free. All those lovely palm fronds and fallen trees and bits of garden waste that came through after Tropical Cyclone Fina, that's all being processed right now at Hidden Valley. And it's going to get turned into mulch, which you can go and pick up for free.
A lot of mulch.
It's going to be an awful lot of mulch. Over the couple of weeks after Tropical Cyclone Fina, residents dropped off 55,000 tonnes of green waste at that Hidden Valley site. I don't know what that equates to in terms of mulch, but I imagine it's going to be a fair bit.
Yeah.
So right now, over the next couple of weeks, that's sort of being transitioned to processed into mulch. So from the 23rd of January to the 8th of February, you can pick up that mulch there at Hidden Valley for free.
Wow.
Thrown some curly questions at the government, if there's going to be limits on how much mulch you can pick up, whether commercial horticultural operations will be able to load up on that free mulch, and also whether it's going to be appropriate for a horticultural operation, if it's going to be right for the farm. Put all those questions to the government, and I'll let you know, Matt, when I know.
Okay, so we're still waiting on some answers.
We are indeed.
If you're a local mulch business, this is a bit of a bugger.
Oh, yeah.
Bit of competition's just come in out of nowhere.
That it has.
Yeah, okay, free. Free mulch. Unbelievable. All right, thank you for that. That starts next month on the 23rd of January. Get the trailers ready. Got to go to the newsroom. See you back here in 5 minutes for a chat with the Weather Bureau.
G'day, I'm Cody Ammer. I'm from Nommal Nommal Station in Northern Territory, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. In a moment, we'll take a look at the latest fad in the Northern Territory and why the Department of Fisheries is interested in it. And before 1:30, because we are approaching the end of the year, I'm going to share with you one of my favourite stories of 2025. Well, let's go to the Weather Bureau now. Because there's a bit going on. Sally Cutter's there this afternoon. How are you, Sally?
Oh, not too bad, thanks.
A few warnings out for the Northern Territory. Let's perhaps talk about that first. Starting with the MacArthur River, what's the latest out there at Borroloola?
Yep, okay. MacArthur River, we do have a flood warning out. We are expecting it to reach minor and peak probably about 9.1 metres. This is just into the minor overnight. Into Monday night and into Tuesday, and then it's going to come down. So it's getting pretty close to the bridge deck now. And it's just, we've got this big sort of peak that's gone through MacArthur River Mine, and that's got to work its way down into the Borroloola area. So it's at 12:15, it was 8.29, so that was only 0.71 underneath the bridge deck. So it's this rising, see it rise, because MacArthur the river mine itself actually rose for about a day before it reached its peak and then dropped. So this is going to be a steady increase through today, and then hopefully it will be easing off during tomorrow. But yeah, that's the main concern. But there's probably other rivers that to exit into the Gulf that have got similar rainfall pulses going down them.
Yep.
So which is why we've got the flood watch for those, and then we've got it extending into the Barkly for the impacts, but there's also just a little bit of more showers coming around the low in Queensland.
Yeah, so I've got here that the MacArthur River may peak near 9.1 metres tonight into early hours of tomorrow morning. So this is a minor flood level. I guess for this catchment, over the next 5 days or so, is there any potential for really heavy rain that could turn this situation into something more severe?
We're not expecting it. The next couple of days, there's not going to be much around. We've got when I say dry air, it's not down where us humans are, it's up higher in the atmosphere. So that's stopping a lot of those showers and a lot of those storms. We still could get some showers. But the rain coming, not getting significant rainfall dropping. We might see a little bit as the should be going to a couple to Tuesday into Wednesday, Thursday later in the week, but that's going to be right across the top end. We're going to see the showers and storms becoming a little bit more widespread across right across the north.
Okay, I mentioned it earlier that when you look at top end radars this afternoon, there's not much to see. But you go across the border into Queensland, and that's a big system there that's dumping a lot of rain.
Yeah. And some of the totals we've seen in the NT from it, I know Kona Station had 225 millimetres for 9 a.m. on Saturday.
Yeah.
So there's some really big totals potentially coming out of this. And if you're looking at sort of the weekly totals, so we've got a lot up in that 200, 100, 150 to 200 even. So Dry River didn't live up to its name and said 220 millimetres in the daily. And yeah, there's some really big totals out there. Merganella's close to 263, so yeah. And Glenochy, 260.
We heard earlier from some cattle producers in the Gulf Country of Queensland really concerned about the weather, you know, too much rain now and wind chill coming through, so they're concerned about the health of their livestock. Are we seeing any similar conditions on the NT side of the Gulf?
No, because the low and the heavier rains are now really confined into Queensland, we're not actually seeing that. And what we're going to be seeing is that shower activity. So there'll be sun in between. The current looks like it's probably high to very high livestock chill over there for tomorrow. Yeah, it's certainly going to that side of the border the other side of the border is where the main issues are. This side is more the showery, the sun, and the sun is coming out in between.
I'm just looking at the Weather Bureau's long list of warnings there in outback Queensland, and one of them actually mentions that these conditions also present a risk to cattle and other livestock. What's the threshold of the wind chill that the Bureau records that creates that kind of alert?
The thing I've got in front of me is the Nixon-Smith equation for wet sheep. It works out is energy divided by meter squared divided by H, so cumulative that's hours. So it's cumulative the loss of the kilocalories per meter squared per hour. So it's a rate of a calculation that the winds would go into that plus all the temperature plus the relative humidity. So and the fact that the animals are wet is probably the main thing there. So that is probably slightly different for cattle, but it should be different for cattle because they haven't got more. But
they've got a bit more of an engine behind them to hopefully deal with this. But I think it was 2019 from memory where a lot of livestock were lost during conditions similar to this. So they just need some blue sky and some warmth.
Yeah.
All right then. And the other big weather story at the moment is to our west. What's the latest on Cyclone Hayley?
She's out there. We do have a warning between north of Broome to Cape Levique, and then the watch zone is Broome to Currie Bay and includes Derby. She's currently Category 1, but expecting to reach Category 2 in about 24 hours, within 24 hours, and while she's heading south at the moment, she does turn to the southeast and then easterly. And at the moment, the crossing point is about Cape Levique.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very small system, so it's probably not going to survive too far inland. But there's a risk that we're going to see those Category 2 winds as it makes landfall on the latest track.
Okay, so not powerful enough to keep charging across and maybe bring moisture into the Victoria River District or the Tanami.
Can't rule that out.
Right.
There is moisture coming across, but it's probably not going to come across as one of these systems that drops and holds together to drop a lot of rain. Just because it's so small, the friction's going to have a larger impact on the system as it moves over land. But there certainly is increasing in showers and storms. So we're not only getting them across the top end, we've got some of the moisture being brought around to the south of that Queensland low into the eastern parts of the NT. But from that Wednesday, we do see it coming down the border again and then extending right across the NT later in the week until we get a change coming through on the next weekend.
Okay. And is it fair to say, whilst there's this cyclone in the west and big weather system brewing in Queensland. It's sucking all the moisture away from the territory and making things a bit boring and a bit hot in the NT.
Well, I don't think hail's actually big enough to have that bigger impact.
Right.
Because we are still, the trough's a long way south as well. It's probably through the Tanami and Barkly at the moment. So we've still got a lot of room for those low-level westerlies. We haven't quite got the structure. The middle-level winds have decided they want to try to be southerlies instead of westerlies. So we've still got that moisture coming onshore off the Timor Sea, and so we're seeing some really warm temperatures along the west coast overnight. But that's still bringing that moisture in. So once we get rid of the drier air that's being brought around on the western flank of the Queensland Low, there's nothing stopping those showers and storms returning across the north, and this is what we're expecting to happen over the course of the week.
All right then, Sally. Thanks so much for your time this afternoon. Appreciate it.
That's okay.
That is Sally Cutter there at the Weather Bureau. Rabbit Flat and Kintore expecting tops of 43 degrees today. Yallara is expecting a top of 40, Docker River 41. But Lake Nash Cattle Station out near the Queensland border, a top of 28 degrees today.
Join the ultimate party this New Year's Eve across the ABC with a massive lineup including Melanie C, plus the famous Sydney Fireworks, audio described on the ABC Listen app.
Happy New Year!
On ABC TV and iView and the ABC Listen app.
I mentioned a moment ago that there's a new fad in the territory that's got the Department of Fisheries excited. Now, when I say fad, I'm talking about fish aggregating devices. Fads. Tell you more about this next.
G'day, James McKenna here from Tipperary Station, running the lemon operation here, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Yeah, so if you're a keen fisho, then hopefully you're aware of the news that stocks of golden snapper and black jewfish around Darwin, those stocks are under pressure. To try and turn this situation around, the Department of Fisheries has deployed 4 FADs, fish aggregating devices. They've been plonked in the ocean off Darwin to attract different species for wreck fishos to target, like mackerel, queenfish and trevally. To learn more about this, Tom Robinson had a chat to Senior Executive Director of Fisheries, Matt Osborne.
What they compose of is a large yellow buoy type float that people will see on the surface. And below that, we've got our mooring system. So the ones that have been deployed consist of chain throughout the length of between the anchoring system and the buoy. We're also trialling on 2 of the FADs some additional habitat to assess if this additional habitat will help attract additional bait fish and therefore the predatory fish that they're also attracted to, and see if that boosts the productivity.
These devices are being put in during the wet season, obviously. Are they sturdy enough to deal with the conditions?
That's what we're certainly testing and intending. So the design that we've applied is very similar to the ones that have been used in the East Coast and in northern Western Australia. And we think by including that chain and the quite heavy anchoring system that we have deployed, that they should last throughout the wet season and the weathers that come with it. We've also included GPS tracking on those buoys as well, so we can keep a close eye on if they are being pulled or if the mooring systems change.
There's been a lot of, I guess, media coverage lately about golden snapper and jewfish populations. What are you hoping, you know, are you hoping that these fish aggregating devices might help turn some of the stock levels around, which have been under pressure for quite a while now?
Yeah, so what these FADs are intending to do is to provide recreational fishers an opportunity to target some other species, to shift some effort that might have historically been on some of our reef fish, which are at risk, and we're working on a recovery plan to build those stocks back to where they need to be. So that these FADs are a part of supporting the lifestyle, which is very fishing focused in the Northern Territory, and encouraging our recreational fishers to give a go at targeting some of these pelagic species and targeting them at these fish aggregating devices.
So is, I guess, the hope that people will go to these devices rather than the natural reefs that are already there?
Yeah, it's applying a different style of fishing. So the reef fish are quite demersal and they sit in the bottom parts of the waters. These fads are designed to attract the pelagic species that inhabit the mid and upper reaches of the water column. So by targeting these areas with lures and trolling or casting, as some people like to do, but encouraging them to shift their focus and give our reef fish a bit of a rest.
And if anyone's keen to get involved, where are they? Is it Darwin Harbour that they're in?
So they're located offshore from Darwin. So we do have our artificial reef networks out there at Lee Point, Fenton Patches and North Gutter. And the FADs are located in between those locations. So there's two located between the Lee Point Artificial Reef Complex and Fenton Patches. And there's the other two located in the area of between Fenton Patches and North Gutter.
That is Senior Executive Director of Fisheries Matt Osborne talking fads with Tom Robinson. And the department wants you to remember, if you're out there fishing, don't tie your boats up to these devices, right? Because that risks damaging the equipment. It risks dragging them off their designated mark. So don't tie up to them.
Keep your garden growing strong with ABC Organic Gardener magazine. Inside, you'll find summer pruning advice, organic pest solutions, and our expert guide to eggplants at newsagents or abcmagazines.com.au.
Just quickly, the NT government has granted $258,000 to a bunch of agribusinesses in the territory as part of round two of its agricultural value add grants. Now, these grants are essentially the government matching projects dollar for dollar in the territory. So well done to the following businesses who were successful in round two. Hail River Cattle Company picked up $50,000 for its road train weighbridge. Outback Connection received $46,000 for pollination expansion and biosecurity training. Rum Jungle Meatworks picked up $45,000 for some new abattoir equipment. SNH Best Fresh Growers and Packers received $43,000 for the development of protected cropping technologies. Go Wide Cattle Company received $34,000 for silage feeding yards and storage. The Berrima Export Yards picked up $18,000 for some upgrades. And well done to NT Tropical Passion Fruit, which received $13,000 for some expansion works to Horsnell Road, tapping off a big year for that business out near Noonamar.
Yeah, g'day, how you going? My name is Jason Moon, owner of NT Tropical Passion Fruit. We're on the farm today, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
I've got to say, one of my favourite stories this year was hanging out with Jason Moon and his family. They've been growing beautiful, big passion fruits near Noonamar. It's now easily the biggest passion fruit farm in the territory, and the business has been going so well that they are now expanding. I went out to that farm to learn all about their plans.
Yeah, g'day, how you going? My name's Jason Moon, owner of NT Tropical Passion Fruit, and here we are out on the farm today with Matt.
This is the biggest passion fruit farm in the top end. Paint a picture of where we are, Mooney.
We're out at Noonamar. We're just past the pub there. So we've got 1,800 vines here, and then we've got another new farm happening over on Horsell Road.
And we'll get to the expansion in just a moment, but just remind our audience how you got into the business of passion fruit.
Yeah, well, probably about, well, it would have been nearly 10 years ago now. Me and a good mate of mine, Brett Thal, we sort of mucked around a little bit with some fruit over at his place, planted a few vines, and sort of we started to develop some really good fruit. And then all of a sudden we got this awesome fruit that come through, and we thought we might be able to do something with this. So we sort of kept on playing around with it, and then we thought, bugger it, let's put a few in the ground. So we threw 600 in, gave them 12 months, and just the fruit was unbelievable. So then we expanded from there and put another 1,200 in at this farm here.
Start small, grow big.
Correct. That was a plan. So, yeah, make sure that we had the right varieties and people liked them and people love them. So we thought, righto, let's go.
We are in amongst the vines. Let's just go over because I can see a ripe passion fruit here. Can you tell our audience a bit more about it?
Yeah, righto. So these are a hybrid Panama variety. These are a very large fruit. Our average fruit size is about 200-250 grams per piece, so only about 4 to a kilo.
They're about the size of your fist.
Yeah, they're monsters, and full of pulp, very sweet, and yeah, they're a real pretty looking fruit.
How often are you picking?
At the moment, we'd start to come on to the better part of the season. So every day we have a picker out here. We do ground picking off the ground. We pull in probably 100 to 200 kilos a day off the ground. And then on a Saturday we do a vine pick as well. So yeah, every day it's got to be picked. But
why are you mostly allowing them to hit the ground?
Just mainly because of staff shortages. We can't get the staff out here. Yeah.
Oh, right. So ideally, you would be vine picking.
Yeah, ideally, the better way to pick them is vine. Not too bad for the local markets. They get delivered in there twice a week, so the fruit's perfect. And it does hold for about 2 weeks. We put it in the cool room storage here at about 10 degrees to hold it. And, the quality of the fruit is perfect when it does drop on the ground. When you send them down south, you've got, obviously, shipping costs. Time, so they're on a truck for 3 days, so we try to pick them a little bit greener, not much, but a little bit greener, and set them down south. By the time they get down there, they're perfect.
Yeah, so I'm now seeing this fruit a lot around Darwin, but tell me more about the interstate markets. How is that going?
Yeah, we're sort of branching out a little bit down there. Last year we sent to Sydney and Melbourne, and they went really well. A lot different the way we package them up here because our fruit are so big. So we'll send them in a bigger box, which sort of is a total opposite to everybody else does in Australia. But because our fruit is so big, we had to send them in a bigger box. Sydney, they love them. They love the big fruit. Big market in there for the big fruit. Melbourne's a little bit different. They wanted a little bit smaller fruit, so we just grade it up and send the smaller fruit to Melbourne, bigger fruit to Sydney. Just branching into some new agents down in Melbourne now. Hopefully we'll send some fruit down there this week for some trials to go into Coles and Woolies in Victoria and Tasmania.
Ooh, taking on the big chains, hey?
Yeah, we're going to have a bit of a play with it. We're going to need it eventually. So, yeah, we'll start a bit of a play, see how they go with it, see what they like the fruit, see what the customers like, I suppose. And, yep, and then hopefully we'll get into the big chains all around Australia.
Yeah, so you're talking about how you'll need these extra customers because there's going to be a lot more fruit coming online in the near future for this business. Tell us about the expansion.
Yeah, so we found a really good block on Horsnell Road, 20-acre block over there. It was already cleared, good fences there, irrigation was there, packing shed, cool room. So I snapped that up about 4 months ago. Brought my son Brad on full board, full-time now. And we're developing that farm over there, so we'll have 1,500 plants in the ground next week. We start planting out, and then we'll do it in stages, and then we'll start the next 1,500. So eventually, we want to get up to about 8,000.
Wow! And will it be exactly like what we see here? A setup that reminds me of a vineyard.
It will be very similar. The watering system, we've changed the watering system a little bit over there, just to save a bit more water. Makes it a lot better. The plants will get the direct drip system instead of a sprinkler system on them. So probably won't be quite as pretty as this one, but yeah.
And when you've at full production, 8,000 vines, how much would you be picking in a week?
At the moment, it's normally around September. I'm going to hopefully push that right through to December. And with all vines going, we should be getting 4 tonne plus a week.
Wow. So a bit like mangoes, they love the heat, hey? It's go time when the weather gets hot.
Yeah, once that humidity starts. Like they're going really well now. We get a couple of hot days, we'll go into another flower flush, and that way we'll get a lot more fruit in hopefully September, October. And then what they sort of slowed down in November last year, and we want to try to push them out. So if we get another couple more cold weeks, then they should push out in December, I'm hoping, where that's where the market down south is crazy, so.
What are you loving about it?
Oh, I love everything about it, mate. Like, working with my family.
Yeah. Very special indeed. Yeah,
it is. I've got my grandkids work here as well. My son, obviously, full-time. My daughter-in-law's over, and she's now grafting away. She's flat-out grafting. And that's what we want to do. I want this as a family business. So.
Yep.
Even at the new farm, we've got chickens now. We're going to be having eggs. So we'll have 300 chooks over there, and that's all just for the local market only. I don't want to send them in down south anymore. I don't want to look after locals. They'll be pasture raised. They've got 20 acres of grass to eat, and yeah, that's so they're nice happy chooks.
Yeah, on a happy farm. These are beautiful fruit. They're so colourful.
Yeah, no, they are pretty. They're a totally different colour to a normal Panama. They're sort of more of a, I suppose, nearly call them pink. Yeah, and they're just unbelievable. They shine. Like a lot of people, they've got a wax fruit. We don't wax our fruit at all. It just it comes off the vine like that, and it's shiny. You nearly see yourself in it.
Yeah, all the best for the expansion, and lovely to see you.
Yeah, no, thanks, Matt. Appreciate you coming out and have a look.
That is Territory Passion Fruit grower Jason Moon. He and his family have built the most amazing business out the back of Noonamar. That was one of my favourite stories of 2025, and I look forward to heading out there next year in 2026 to see how that expansion is going. There's only two more country hours left for this year. Can you believe it? Just repeating. As we go to air this afternoon, there is a flood watch in place for parts of the Barkly and Carpentaria catchments. There is a minor flood warning in place for the MacArthur River. And there's a bunch of road closures out there in the Territory at the moment, including the Plenty Highway, which is impassable between Jervois Station and the Queensland border. The Sandover Highway is closed between Emeru Elkedra boundary to the Queensland border, and the Carpentaria Highway closed between Cape Crawford and MacArthur River Mine. Stay up to date via the Road Report NT website. Stay up to date via the Weather Bureau's website, although it does seem that the next few days in the NT will be pretty hot, but not too much rain or about, allowing for some of those creeks and rivers just to settle down a bit. That's it for today's Country Hour. I'll see you back here at 12:30. Keep it rural.